Good evening, and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm the host of Your Legal Rights, Jeff Hayden. Our topic tonight, national divorce. We're not talking about mom and dad fighting over child custody and spousal support as they go their separate ways. We're talking about a proposal advanced by someone who never ceases to astound us, member of Congress Marjorie Taylor Greene, to split the United States in two, with the red states breaking off from the blue. This, the Congress member says, is a great idea because it would save the citizens of the red states from what she characterizes as the blue state woke culture. Let me turn things over to tonight's host, Emmy-nominated legal and political analyst, Dean Johnson. Dean?
Good evening, everyone. You know, Jeff, lest our listeners think that this is a fanciful issue, a Yahoo News poll showed that one in five Americans and one of every three Republicans believe that their state would be better off if it seceded from the Union. An earlier poll showed that 52% of Americans believe that there will be, quote, a civil war in their lifetime. South Carolina legislators have proposed a death penalty for having or performing an abortion. A proposed bill in Texas would give tax breaks to families, but would explicitly exclude LGBT couples and divorced parents with children. Tennessee now prohibits public drag shows, even though the governor of Mississippi, the governor of Tennessee, Governor Bill Lee, who was a major proponent of this bill, has been pictured in a high school picture in drag in public, and that's circulating among social media. Alabama, Arkansas, Florida, Texas, and other red states permit concealed carries of firearms without a license. MAGA Republicans in Congress have proposed that people who move to blue states or to red states from blue states be prohibited from voting for 2 years. And the list goes on. So the question is, are we really one nation, under God or otherwise, anymore? Is it time for the red and the blue states to go their separate ways? What happens if we do? And most importantly, listeners, what do you think? Should the blue states take their woke culture and let the red states go their own separate way? That's our topic for tonight. Jeffrey.
And folks, we want to hear from you. We want to hear your take on this controversial topic. Give us a call at 415-841-4134. Once again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. Please bear in mind that Dean and I are a guest here to educate and inform about the legal issues of the day. We can't provide legal advice. Certainly, we're not here to advocate a civil war. And the opinions expressed on the show are not necessarily the opinions of KALW or NPR or the Bar Association of San Francisco or the San Mateo County Bar Association or any of our guest employers. Dean?
Now, tonight, we are very happy to have back one of our all-time favorite guests, David French. David is currently a columnist for the New York Times and a Christian and a conservative, which must make for some pretty interesting morning meetings. David is also the author of Divided We Fall, The Secession Threat and How to Restore Our Nation. And by the way, listeners, this book is a must read for anyone who's concerned about where America is and where it might be going. It presents a graphic description of America's two cultures and the fault lines between them. As a little bit of background, David graduated cum laude from Harvard Law School. He then served a tour of duty in Iraq as a major in the United States Army and was awarded the Bronze Star. David briefly considered a run for president in 2016, citing moral objections to the candidacy of the presumptive Republican nominee Donald Trump. When he did so, he and his family subsequently came under attacks from the right, being bombarded by hateful tweets and other messages, including, unfortunately, an image of his daughter being escorted into a gas chamber. Although David is a lifelong Republican, David now calls himself a man without a party. We should also mention that we invited Congressperson Green to join us, but not surprisingly, we did not receive an immediate response from her office.
And without further ado, let us welcome David. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Well, thanks so much. If I'd known that I could have been on with Marjorie Taylor Greene, that would have been exciting radio without any question.
Well, we're going to save that for the next episode. But tonight, I think we have got so much to talk about. And as our listeners know, I always like to start off with a big question. And this question occurred to me as I lay awake a few nights ago. You know, we here in America, we've had 200 years of slavery. In my lifetime, we had legally enforced apartheid. We have a higher level of inequality than any industrial nation other than Russia. Women didn't get the vote until the early 20th century. Our chief executive is not elected by popular vote. In fact, two of the last four presidents lost the popular vote. And there's so many barriers and so many blockades to the policy being reflected in the will of the people. I lay there wondering, and this is my question for you, David, is America really a democracy anymore? I mean, are we a democracy, an autocracy, or here in 2023, are we just hypocrisy?
That's a really good question. We're a democratic republic, which means that ultimately the people have the final say over the course of our nation, but we have a lot of checks even on the power of the people. So, for example, we have a Bill of Rights. We have a Civil War amendments that are counter-majoritarian so that you're able to speak, or you're going to be free of cruel and unusual punishment or receive due process, even if the vast majority of people don't want you to speak or want to punish you in a cruel and unusual way or want to deprive you of due process. So we haven't always, of course, lived up to these values, but we do have ultimately we are a democracy that has a large number of counter-majoritarian elements that are designed both to check power, to prevent majoritarian tyranny, and also to sort of slow down, quite frankly, change, which can be for good or for ill. But we're definitely a democracy in a Republican form of government. And we're healthier when we remember that, and we're more unhealthy when either side, either we become we have too little democracy, or we have too little liberty. If either one of those two things gets out of balance, we have real problems.
Well, you know, one thing that's always impressed me about you, Dave, you label yourself a conservative. I don't like to label myself, but I'm definitely out on the left side of the spectrum. But I think we both have a real commitment to democracy. And, you know, one thing that I learned about you is that it's not just theoretical. It's a very personal commitment. And it all kind of started with your tour of duty in Iraq and then your return to the United States. Could you tell us that story?
Yeah, I would say a good fair way to describe me before I deployed to Iraq, and I deployed in 2007 as part of the surge, and I deployed a little bit older. I joined when I was a little bit older, so I was 37 years old and officer basic, so that was an adventure. But so I deployed a little bit later in life than the typical officer, and I was a pretty partisan guy, I'd say, when I went over there. I was lifelong Republican, kind of labeled myself as a Reagan Republican, I would say very partisan. Then I got to Iraq and I landed there in the middle of the civil war in Iraq, the Sunni Shia civil war. And it was a difficult deployment. But then I learned a lot about why they were fighting each other. And it wasn't just sort of ideological reasons. It wasn't just theological reasons. It wasn't even entirely about sort of political balance of power or the share of the oil revenues or the composition of the army. An enormous amount of the fighting between Sunni and Shia was really rooted in very, very immediate and very real grievances. In other words, say the Sunni had killed my cousin or the Shia had killed my uncle. And so there was these very real grievances. When I got home and at the very end of 2008, I began to notice a lot of the same kinds of divisions in the U.S. Again, to be clear, not as serious, but very real divisions rooted in grievances. And as I began to see it, I began to really cycle out of a lot of my partisanship because I began to see that my partisanship was in fact part of the problem and that extreme partisanship was part of the problem. It was part of what was driving us apart. And so the sad thing is I was becoming less partisan at exactly the moment when most of the rest of the country was becoming much more partisan. And so by 2016, I was really pretty far out of step with my own historical political party. And when they nominated Donald Trump, who I saw as an avatar of the worst kind of partisanship, this kind of partisanship called negative polarization, that's when I said I can't be a part of the GOP any longer.
Yeah, you know, I've talked on the air a couple of times about my friends and relatives that I have back in the red states. And the feeling you get from them is that they are aggrieved. They think yes. that in some way they feel betrayed. Who betrayed them? And in their minds, who betrayed them and why? What was that good old, they're very nostalgic. They remember a good old day, and now it's not such a good old day since they took over and we have to take it back. So right. What's the ground of that? Where does that come from?
Well, I mean, there have been a lot of cultural changes in the United States, cultural, legal, political changes in the United States. And so if your history and you come from a sort of a white Protestant tradition, then there has been a real change in the balance of power in the United States in the last three or four generations. So, you know, there was a time, if you just want to focus on the religion aspect of it, when white Protestants were so ascendant in this country that essentially public schools were treated as if they were, in many parts of the country, as if they were Protestant schools. And so you had these things called Blaine Amendments, which were anti-Catholic state constitutional amendments that were passed across the United States and state after state after state that were on their face designed to prevent public support for, quote, sectarian institutions. But the reality is when they said sectarian, they meant Catholic because the Protestant schools were the public schools. And so they didn't want to have any mixture. It's not that they had any problems with mixing church and state because the public schools were quite Protestant at the time. It was that they really objected to mixing Catholics and state. So it's very targeted. And white Protestants in the South had an enormous amount of power. They had so much power that, you know, for example, when even in the generation right before me and sort of the tail end of my this was tailing off right when I went to elementary school, you would start every school day with Bible reading, for example. You would start every school day with prayer. Now, at the same time that was happening in the 1950s and 1960s, they were starting with Bible reading and prayer in highly segregated schools. And so while they were quite interested in Christianity in schools, they were not nearly as interested in the presence of Black Christians, and they were not interested in the critique of the culture from Black Christians, which launched, of course, the civil rights movement. So you had a lot of power held in the hands of white Protestants. And for the last 50, 60, 70 years, that power has been dissipating. It has been spread to more communities in the United States of America. So for some folks, there's a sense of lost status, of lost power that is very real. Now, I would say, it's been all on the net. It's been much more for the better. America is a more just country. It is actually, in many ways, its policies are a greater reflection of even biblical justice now than there were when white Protestants had a monopoly on power in many parts of the country. But there has been a real change. There has been a real decline in power on the part of, a particular segment of this country. And that's very, very disruptive. And then when you lay on top of that a lot of the animosity that is inherent in partisan politics, and you start to get a sense of people feeling like they don't feel as at home in the country. They feel like they have been victimized. And, and that creates an enormous amount of resentment.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm Jeff Hayden, and I'm joined by tonight's host, Dean Johnson. Tonight, we're discussing Blue State Rebellion or a National Divorce. Our guest tonight is David French, New York Times columnist and author of Divided We Fall, America's Secession Threat and How to Restore Our Nation. Now, come on, folks. David French is a self-proclaimed Christian conservative. He likes the idea that Roe was overturned. You got anything to say about this? Do you have anything to say about this blue state divorce that looks a lot like the Civil War? If you have questions for my guests, our phone number is 415-841-4134. Again, 415-841-4134. If you're outside the Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. And you can call us regarding any question. You're not limited to the point we may be in our conversation. Think about what this means if we let the red states go. Is this really a good idea? 866-798-8255. Dean?
Yeah, and if you haven't lit up the phone boards by now, we're never going to do it. Come on, you folks. This is the bluest part of blue America. And you guys have been accused of being immersed in a woke culture. Come on. This is your chance to talk to a conservative who thinks these things out at a very high level, who writes conservative columns for the New York Times, no less. So, I mean, great, great opportunity to get your questions answered and to open up some debate.
Let's start with one of these questions. We have Dee from San Francisco. Dee, you're on the air on Your Legal Rights. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. A really interesting conversation. And I just wanted to say that I think that the whole idea that entire states are made up of people with the same viewpoint and perspective on things is a fallacy. And I think it really sort of misses the point that there are a lot of people who would be swept up in these changes who are powerless to do anything about it. Your esteemed guest and I might disagree on Roe, but for example, people are not, this idea that people are free to leave a state if they don't agree with it is really kind of a privileged viewpoint. And many people have zero actual ability to leave a state and go somewhere where they might agree with policies. So I think it's a dangerous concept, although I understand there's some efficiency to the idea. I don't think that it takes into account the people who are struggling the most under some of the policies in both blue and red states, and we need to protect the people who are most needing protection.
Yeah, David, Dee raises a great point. These red states aren't pure red, particularly the urban areas are about as blue as you can get. So what happens to those people in those blue urban areas if the red states break off?
Yeah, that's a really good question because not all the blue states are all blue. California has a lot of bright red areas in California. Not every part of a red state is red. I'm just one county south of Davidson County where Nashville is, and Nashville went for Joe Biden by more than 20 points in a state that went for Trump by 20 points. So there is a bit, there are big divides even within the states. So I think when we talk about national divorce, what we have to say right off the bat is it's a crazy, terrible, horrible idea. It would be a catastrophe, an utter catastrophe on so many levels. But that doesn't mean it won't happen. Why? Because people are perfectly capable of sleepwalking into catastrophe, as history shows us over and over and over again. If there is enough animosity, if there is enough hatred, people will do malicious, terrible things. And so one of the things that we saw, for example, in 1861, when the South seceded from the Union, an example where the South's incredible fury and anger at the North led it to do something catastrophically wrong. What you saw was, even though there were dissenters within these Southern states, didn't matter. When the majority of the South wanted to leave, these Southern states left. Now, East Tennessee, where I live in Middle Tennessee, but East Tennessee was quite unionist. West Virginia exists because it was the unionist part of Virginia, for example. There were pockets throughout the South of unionist sentiment. It didn't matter. The overwhelming majorities of these states took everyone with them when they waltzed out of the Union and triggered the worst war in American history. And so one thing that I wrote about this in the Times, and I tried to make this point very clear, which is it's a terrible idea. I can't think of a compelling argument for it, but it doesn't matter that it's a bad idea. If enough people are angry at each other, they will do terrible and malicious things to each other. And that's why I wanted to say, we cannot just sleepwalk through the next several years where we just assume that everything's going to be okay, that ideas like national divorce are so insane that nobody really would make any moves in that direction. Some of the polling that you went through is actually pretty scary. There are actually some polls that indicate that a plurality of Republicans are open to this idea. And so this is something that we have to look at and say the animosity in our country is out of control. And Dee raised a really good point. The people who would be dissenters in any given state, whether you're a blue dissenter in a red state or a red dissenter in a blue state, they would suffer immensely in any kind of national divorce type situation. It would create a huge amount of disruption in internal migration as people move from one place to another. It's just a terrible idea at every level. But just because it's a terrible idea doesn't mean it won't happen, because people commit to terrible ideas all the time.
I think we've got callers lined up on both sides. Jeff, who have we got?
We have lots of callers. And additionally, I've been receiving private messages outside from people that are listening to the show. And much to David's point, the example that I was thrown was from the opposite perspective, that is citing the state of Oregon, where we have a fairly progressive city that's pulling an otherwise red state into the blue state camp. And right, that begs the question whether existing lines would be preserved or not. But let me jump to our next caller, who is Freeman in San Mateo. Freeman, you're on the air. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Yes, good evening to you, Mr. Hayden. I wanted to point out that a national divorce is not insane. It's not inherently racist, and it's already taking place. The change in the balance of power that your guest talked about is a question of loyalty and trust. Loyalty to Western civilization versus loyalty to the global Marxist elite who fixed the 2020 presidential election and is behind the crisis of the Silicon Valley Bank.
You left out the COVID succinct pandemic.
That too.
Well, I didn't hear a question there, but I have a question for David. So this red, let's assume that we have red nation and blue nation. How do you envision red nation? Is it an Ayn Rand libertarian republic?
No.
or is it some sort of theocracy?
Libertarian republicanism is in retreat on the right. I'm much more of a libertarian style conservative than many of my friends on the right, who are increasingly authoritarian in their outlook, and they're increasingly statist in their outlook. And I'm glad we had the previous caller, even though he didn't ask a question, because he is demonstrating exactly the hostility that I'm talking about, how people are extremely angry and they have a sense of grievance. Now, sometimes in what's can be particularly dangerous is when that sense of grievance is disconnected from reality, because it becomes very difficult to deal with it. And then once again, we have an example from history. In 1861, when the South seceded, part of the reason why in that moment in 1861 it seceded, in addition to all of the alarm over Lincoln's election, for example, was the thought that people in the North wanted people in the South dead. Okay. And why did they believe that people in the North wanted people in the South dead? Because there were many people in the North who celebrated John Brown. John Brown was the abolitionist who took over the arsenal at Harper's Ferry. Eventually, his effort to spark a slave rebellion was crushed by a U.S. Army a counterattack led by Robert E. Lee, ironically enough. And so Brown then was arrested, tried, and executed. But before he was executed, in parts of the North, he became a bit of a folk hero. And people in the South believed that that meant that people in the North wanted them dead. And in the Texas Secession Declaration actually contains a conspiracy theory. A conspiracy theory that emissaries from the North were poisoning people in the South. And so malice and conspiracies can lead to division. We've seen it happen before.
Are you telling me that there was fake news back in the Civil War?
Not only fake news, but the partisan press. So the partisan press helped whip up frenzy for secession. And so by the time there was secession, there were people in the South who were not only spoiling to secede, many of them were also spoiling for a fight with the North if it tried to stop secession. And so, yeah, you can go back and you can read that Texas Secession Declaration and see a conspiracy theory right in the pages of it. And so we don't deal with so many new things as we deal with new permutations of old things all the time.
And after all, it was Abraham Lincoln who warned, "Don't believe everything you read on the internet." You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area, and we'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.
Let me turn it to Jim Bob in San Diego. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you for taking the call. I would like to take issue with the premise that it is angry right-wingers exclusively looking for a national divorce or secession or what have you. I distinctly remember many, particularly during the previous administration, most of my friends are in California. I remember most of them saying we should secede from the United States because Trump is a dictator, blah, 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 number one. Number two, there are those on the left and on the right that would opine that the states and the federal government are infringing upon their individual liberties with abortion rights or lack thereof, and with other rights, Second Amendment rights, freedom of speech rights, and they would prefer to go to a or live in a haven where their particular flavor of liberty would be perceive to be delivered to them. So it's not just one group. We have a very interesting dynamic where you have, I would say, the majority of the population is pretty polarized on some very important issues. So to frame it as if it were one or the other is probably a little bit on the side of being disingenuous. I don't think it would be necessarily the worst thing ever.
I'm going to turn it over to David here in a minute, but I got to say, I agree with you. You know, we have talked on this show about what we've called the blue state rebellion. I think there are a lot of people out there who in blue states who are tired of subsidizing red states' failed economies. And the ultimate irony is in a lot of the litigation with the federal administration, you're now seeing blue state lawyers raising the argument of states' rights. So I think you're probably right. There's angry people on the left and the right. What do you think, David?
Oh, no question. The numbers regarding negative polarization, in other words, what negative polarization is a phenomenon where people belong to one party or the other, not because they love that party's point of view, but because they hate or fear the other side. The numbers regarding negative polarization are remarkably similar. In other words, Democrats hate Republicans just about at the same rate that Republicans hate Democrats. I mean, then if you look at what they think of each other, it's a mirror image. It's a mirror image. Now, when it comes to the actual question of national divorce, Republicans are much more likely to say that they are interested in national divorce than Democrats, but there's still a lot of Democrats. So it might be, you know, up close to 40%. There are different numbers in different polls, but there was a poll recently that showed more than half of Republicans, slightly more than half of Republicans would be okay if blue states left, so a little over 50%. But if you ask Democrats, would you be okay if the red states left? Almost 40% of them said sure. So what you will see is a situation where there's an enormous amount of animosity. The anger against each other is almost identical. The desire for secession exists on both sides, but it's more common on the right. But then I would also go on and say, and this was actually something I wrote in my Sunday column this past week, both blue and red states are violating the First Amendment rights of dissenting citizens. If you look at California and if you look at Florida, I can point to court case after court case after court case where DeSantis policies are blocked by the courts in Florida and Newsom policies are blocked by courts in California, or California policies blocked in their application and Florida policies blocked. And both of them are blocked on First Amendment grounds because state legislatures have passed laws that discriminate against the rights of dissenting citizens in their own state. So this is a disease that is spreading. Almost every month, you're going to read about another state policy blocked in court. You know, just had one happen in New York a couple of weeks ago. A state law called the Boss Bill blocked as it applied to a pro-life group in New York, and you can just go down the line and point out where that hostility by blue against red and by red against blue is leading states to pass unconstitutional laws. And thank goodness for an independent judiciary so far, because so far they've been holding the line on the First Amendment in both red and blue jurisdictions. But if that enmity continues, and if state legislatures continue to just keep flooding the zone with unconstitutional laws, I don't know that the judiciary will keep up or will continue to be an obstacle to these violations of civil liberties.
While you're on the line, Jim Bob, I want to throw something out there. I received a message from another listener who opined or questioned, is there any possibility that Marjorie Taylor Greene herself is a shill, and that when looking at the rise of China, they may be looking at us thinking, divided we fall? Do you think there's any truth to that, that she's really there just to stir things up?
Was that question directed at me?
Jim Bob?
I'm asking both Jim Bob and David French.
Okay, sorry.
You go first, Jim Bob.
I think she speaks from the heart. I think she really believes that. I don't think she says it to stir it up. Whether it's true or not, you know, there's insufficient data. But I had one question for your panel, and then I'll jump off of here.
By all means.
Which is, rather than approaching this from a red state, blue state, and we're disgruntled with them, they're disgruntled with us, have you looked at this from we're all disgusted with the assault on us by the federal government? And I think that's where the common ground lies. Have you looked at it from that approach? Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for joining us in Your Legal Rights. And David French, how do you feel about that?
I would say that, yes, there is a lot of disgust against the federal government, but for in completely different reasons. So blue state citizens who are disgusted with the federal government have a set of reasons for that that is distinct from red state anger at the federal government. And also what's interesting is the confidence that's registered in the presidency, for example. Let's put Congress aside because nobody seems to like Congress. But the confidence in the presidency reflects how divided we are about the federal government depending on who's in charge of it. So the biggest confidence gap of any major institution in the United States right now is the confidence gap in the presidency while Joe Biden is president, where Democrats are far more likely to have confidence in the presidency than Republicans. And then the instant a Republican president is elected, that confidence gap will switch around and Republicans will have high degree of confidence in the presidency and Democrats will have a low degree. And then when you combine that with the concentration of power in the hands of the chief executive, then you have a problem where American confidence in the government itself is going to start to swing wildly depending on who's in charge, because the anger at the government isn't just sort of – with my more libertarian leanings, I have a lot more skepticism towards government generally. I don't think people tend to share that skepticism towards government generally. They have a skepticism towards government in the hands of their partisan opponents, and that's where you see the real public skepticism. So Jim Bob is – right and wrong at the same time. He's right that there's a lot of universal frustration with the federal government. He's wrong in that it's located in anything approaching a unifying theme. There's any sort of unifying theme behind it, because that anger at the government is very much related to who's in charge at any given moment. It's not a libertarian instinct that says, you know, big government and central planning are problematic inherently. That's more my view. The more partisan view is no, big government and central planning are fine when I'm in charge. So that's where you see big switches in feelings about, for example, the presidency, depending on who's running it.
Let me throw something out there for you to chew on, and I'm going to make a quick pitch for additional callers. There's still a few minutes. But while I'm calling out, I'd like you to think about the idea of whether the solution in whole or in part might lie in moving away from our Republican form of government and that's Republican with a small r, not a big r, and right, towards more of a democracy, and again, democracy with a small d, not a big d, and letting people have more of a voice and less of a voice for career politicians. You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden, joined by tonight's host, Dean Johnson. Tonight, we're talking about a blue state rebellion or a national divorce. Our guest tonight is David French, New York Times columnist and author of Divided We Fall, America's Secession Threat, and How to Restore Our Nation. If you have questions for my guest, our phone number is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. There's still a few minutes left for you to call. And as always, you can call regarding any question on tonight's discussion. That's talking about a divorce between red states and blue states, or some other division among people who think very differently. Call us, join in the topic. You don't have to jump in the exact point we may be in our conversation. Dean?
Yeah, you know, one thing that I always get bipartisan agreement on is the notion that our politicians are just massive underachievers. I mean, we fall behind on health care, on care for the elderly, housing, homelessness, treating drug addiction. I mean, you name it. And, you know, that goes back to our elected officials. Other nations manage to solve those problems or at least mitigate them. Ours don't. And my take on it is that the reason that they underachieve is that we are less than democratic, that our government is structured so that a few senators in the United States Senate who represent less than 10% of the population can essentially block any major policy innovation. And, you know, I think Jeff has hit on it. Maybe the answer for everybody is some structural change to let politicians of either side do what they think is most in the interest of the people. What do you think, David?
And David, before you answer, let me throw something in because I just heard from another listener who responded with a fear that a pure democracy would destroy minority protections. Is there a way to have a more democratic system that maintains control over the tyranny of the majority?
Yeah, I am very, very leery of the tyranny of the majority. So I'm a civil libertarian at heart. So I strongly protect individual liberty from majority control. So that's free speech. First Amendment's a vital, you know, there's a reason why it's first. It's a fundamental vital protection of minority dissent against majoritarian rule. Protections against, for example, unreasonable search and seizure, cruel and unusual punishment, all of these things, as I said before, are checks against majoritarian power because majorities can be very cruel. Democratically elected majorities can be very cruel. The best example
of that. Just to be clear, you're saying Democrat with a small d, not a big d.
Right. Democratically elected majorities can be very cruel. You know, think about what the democratically elected majorities of southern states did is they not only subjugated black citizens, then they eventually began to block black citizens from voting entirely. And so democratic majority was aimed ultimately at the very rights of democratic participation in many of these states. And so we have to have a check on majoritarian tyranny. But at the same time, the system gets out of balance if there's too little effective democracy. So we actually do have a problem in this country in that Congress is deeply dysfunctional, deeply dysfunctional. And when how that places our system under an enormous strain because I don't like the phrase co-equal branches of government because that was not the intent of the founders. Each branch of government can check the other, but the legislature is intended to be supreme. If you look at it, they can fire the president. They can fire the members of the Supreme Court. You can't spend a dime of money unless it's appropriated through the Congress. Congress is technically more powerful than any other branch, yet now it's the least important branch of government. We have punted to the executive an enormous amount of lawmaking authority through regulations. The judiciary through judicial review is, of course, very powerful. And Congress has ceded control. It has stepped back. Well, that's a huge problem because Congress is, especially the House of Representatives, the most democratic part of American government. The House of Representatives is the most purely democratic part of American government. And it has stepped back. It has receded to where it's in many ways, the least relevant of all of the parts of American government. And so that's a real problem. Part of this is gerrymandering. You now have an enormous number of super safe seats so that nobody has any incentive in those seats to compromise with people on the other side. No incentives. In fact, the incentives are the opposite. The biggest threat that they have is from a primary challenger. And how do you get primaried? You get primaried when you compromise. And so we have a Congress that is dysfunctional. We have a Congress that has handed its lawmaking authority over to the president in many ways. Think about this, gentlemen. The Constitution vests the power to declare war in one branch of government and one branch of government alone, and that's Congress. Yet how many military actions have we seen commenced with no congressional approval whatsoever? The Congress has ceded the power to declare war to the president of the United States. That's a remarkable concession. So I am a firm believer in our small r Republican form of government. But the small d Democratic part of that small r Republican government needs to be pumped full of some steroids and human growth hormone right now to get it back in balance.
Let me cede some control over to our callers. First up is Matt in Richmond. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hey, Jeff. Well, my question is, why do you and Dean keep beating this dead horse? Mr. French doesn't know anything more now than he did last August when he was on your program. All this
I've
stuff
so
about
much
a split
more.
In the USA is not going to happen. It's all foolishness. And the polling data that he cites hardly means anything at all. It doesn't presage any kind of national behavior. The country is not going to come apart.
I think the real key question, Matt, one, isn't whether there's really going to be a civil war coming anytime soon, but what we could do to get people talking to one another and make the system function. And in a manner of speaking, that's just what we're doing. This is in today's news. It's within the last couple of weeks that Marjorie Taylor Greene began speaking about a national breakup. And no, I don't think anybody here with us tonight believes that that's the way to solve anything, but getting people talking is.
Jeff, she lives in a world of fantasy and delusion. Citing her is absurd. She doesn't know anything about the sociology or the political sociology of the United States. She's made that very clear time and again. The fact of the matter is all this bellyaching and complaining is normal. It's been going on in this country since the founding of the country, and that's true across the board in many, in practically every country. There's always different interests that arise, and people maneuver to pursue their interests in the political arena. It's all perfectly normal. There's nothing remarkable about it at all.
But it does make for quite an interesting conversation. Matt, thank you for joining us in Your Legal Rights. Come back anytime. I do want to take a couple more calls because we are rapidly running out of time.
Can I respond to Matt real fast?
Absolutely.
So if you had asked me in late 2020, do you think our democracy is so unstable that a mob will storm the Capitol and seize it briefly to try to stop the transmission of power, the peaceful transition of power from a Republican to a Democratic president? Even though I'd written a book talking about these long-term trends that are dividing us, I would have said, no, we're not that unstable yet. We're not so unstable that a angry mob will storm the Capitol in an attempted coup. So if I had said, you know, in September, October 2020, we're ready for an angry mob's going to storm the Capitol to prevent the transfer of power, a bunch of people would have called in and said, you're paranoid, you're crazy, that's ridiculous. But it happened. And then here's the other chilling thing about that. We were Mike Pence, one man, Mike Pence, Vice President Pence. Imagine what would have happened if he just said yes to the John Eastman Donald Trump scheme. It would have been the greatest constitutional crisis since 1861. Because remember, the Eastman scheme was either for Pence to gavel in Trump as president or to delay the certification beyond constitutional bounds. And that would have created an incredible crisis. And I think that our country should never be again in the place where if just one guy says yes to a crazy scheme, we're thrown into a massive, massive crisis. So I agree with the caller. A national divorce makes no sense. It's absurd. It's ridiculous. But you know what is also ridiculous? Storming the Capitol, believing that Italian military satellites had adjusted the outcome of the U.S. election, for example, and creating a crisis we hadn't seen, certainly in my lifetime. So we can't be too complacent about what we're facing with the amount of hatred that's out there.
And for a lot of our regular listeners, they would note that one of our guests, Professor Douglas out of Amherst, not only predicted the storming of the Capitol, but told us months and months and months in advance what day it would happen. Another participant, another guest on this program, none other than John Eastman, test-fired a lot of these theories that got people charged up 13 days before the election. Let me take we've got two more callers and we're almost out of time. I'm going to jump the line if I can for Jeremy from San Francisco. He's not been through before. Welcome to Your Legal Rights, Jeremy.
Thank you. I'm going to give a slight alternative viewpoint. I think Lincoln had it wrong. He should have let them go. The slave states screwed up the Constitutional Convention. We created our form of government to accommodate them, and we have been living with that as a yoke on our progress as a country, and we just should have let those states go and set up their own failing society. The Union Army didn't free the slaves. The slaves freed the slaves. That slave economy was already coming apart and wouldn't have lasted another 10 years. But we could have created the nation that this could have been if we had done without them. And frankly, if we had this national divorce, I'm sure we could get our visa to go visit New Orleans and Miami when time came. But for right now, I am done paying taxes to support those states. And I wish that Lincoln had thought this through.
That is an alternative view. Jeremy, thank you for joining us in Your Legal Rights. Let me jump back to one last caller. We have Dee on the line from San Francisco. Once again, Dee, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to raise the issue of, you know, to our detriment, I think we live in bubbles, and I'm in San Francisco, so of course I do live in a bubble. But I think we've kind of gotten out of practice of engaging in civil discourse with people with whom we don't agree. So we've set it up so that we can surround ourselves both in actual reality and virtual reality by people who agree with us. And the echo chambers and kind of confirmation bias that people seek online has allowed us really to have a level of civility that is quite, you know, very low. And I think it is more difficult to say certain things to someone's face and to be, you know, to have an actual discussion rather than just tweeting something or putting it online. And I just wondered if anyone had any thoughts about how we could address that sort of lack of practice of having civil conversations with people with whom we don't agree.
Well, that's why we have guests like David French, because we want people who are thoughtful conservatives on the right and thoughtful whatever's on the left, and we want to get out of those echo chambers. That's one of the purposes of our show.
Bill Clinton lamented exactly the same point. I've watched him say this more than once, where he commented that people on one side, instead of reading their local newspaper over and over, are turning on cable television and listening to a news network that mirrors their thoughts. And it doesn't matter if you're talking about the left or the right. People want to hear somebody who speaks with a viewpoint that echoes what they're already thinking. Dee, thanks for circling back and joining us again. I've got about just a matter of seconds for Leo, who's back with us in San Francisco. Leo, you're on the air, but we're down to seconds, maybe 20, 30 seconds.
Okay, I just wanted to posit this question to Mr. French. I heard him use the terminology earlier in the show. Could you please define the term woke? What does that mean to you? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's a funny question, because I actually just tweeted a brief definition of woke. So, because that came up on that's come up online a bunch in the last few days, weeks, and months. So I said there's a positive definition of woke. In other words, somebody who's used this term in a sense, in a positive sense, who owns the term. And that would be increased awareness of very real historical and existing systemic injustices. That increased awareness is what it means to be, quote unquote, woke. I think there's a good faith negative definition of it. The downside of wokeness is what I would call illiberal progressivism centered around race and gender. In other words, elements of progressivism that are authoritarian. And then there's a bad faith definition of woke that you often see from sort of the populist right, which is anything that's 1 millimeter to their left, they call woke. So I think there are multiple different ways in which people use the term.
I have to cut us off, and we're completely out of time. I do want to give you less than a minute for any closing thoughts you have.
Yeah, so I'll just deal with the two previous callers very quickly. I would say I'm strongly disagree that Lincoln got it wrong. Where we really, really, really went wrong was ending Reconstruction. That is something that absolutely was a historic tragedy in the United States of America. By pulling out the Union troops and letting the states of the old Confederacy established Jim Crow, massive historic injustice and mistake. That's where we really, really went wrong, was in that 1876 time period. The other thing is a lot of us live in bubbles. I live in a red bubble. You guys might live in a blue bubble if you're in San Francisco. I make a real effort to seek out and read the best expression of the opposing side's point of view. So even if I'm surrounded by red Americans all around me, I try to make an intentional effort to find the best voices in blue America, the best left-wing voices, and read their work while also reading the best work from my more right-leaning colleagues. So seek out, if you're in a bubble, seek out the best expression of the opposing of the other side's point of view, and it's just going to do you a lot of good.
You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. Our guest tonight has been author David French. The book is Divided We Fall, America's Secession Threat, and How to Restore Our Nation. Thanks to tonight's host, Dean Johnson. Your Legal Rights returns next week with a discussion of landlord-tenant law. A big thanks to David for joining us. It's been most enlightening. And especially our thanks to all of you for listening in and those of you that called. And at the controls, Joanne Marr. I'm Jeff Hayden. Good night. And remember that when it comes to your legal rights, use them or lose them.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.